Okay. Hi, everybody. It's good to be here. I'm just going to take a moment to look at everybody, see who's here. See some wonderful familiar faces and some wonderful new faces. And some non-faces, which is perfectly fine, of course. So, pain and other unwanted body sensations. So, as a number of you know, I've had a chronic illness for pretty much most of my life. And among other things, it causes a great deal of pain. There are many kinds of pain with this illness, in many different intensities. In all kinds of different places. And I hate to put it this way, but sometimes I feel like a connoisseur of pain, for better or worse. The pain actually comes in from a disease called small fiber autonomic neuropathy, which in my case is also connected to a secondary mitochondrial disorder. So you can see why I don't usually offer the diagnosis because it doesn't clear things up for most people. But there you have it. So, in the title, when I said pain and other unwanted body sensations, just to clarify what I meant by that, that there are lots of kinds of sensations in the body that we don't like, that often are associated with illness, but sometimes just with whatever went on in our days. So it could be maybe somebody has nausea, dizziness, tremors, seizures, fatigue, stuffed sinuses, or other reasons for having impaired breathing, balance issues, instability, make described as painful, but we don't have an umbrella term for them. A friend of mine who also has a chronic illness, sometimes when we get on the phone, how's your day going? Well, it's a high symptom day or it's a low symptom day. Because we have illnesses, we'll call them symptoms. But I don't know what somebody does who doesn't actually have an illness. It's just they happen to be nauseous today or whatever. I guess you'll say the specific thing. I will say that of the many unwanted body sensations I have, one of them is very badly named brain fog. It's just really general and euphemistic. So I mention that because it's pretty much guaranteed that One or maybe many times tonight, I will just need to pause and gather my thoughts. So there's no need to worry. I will come back to you, I assure you. And most of the time, I'm going to be using the word pain, as an umbrella term. And if you're dealing with a lot of these other unwanted body sensations, please just, include those sensations, those symptoms under the umbrella of pain tonight. Some of you know the monk Anallio, and in one of his books, in passing, he called strong physical pain the most unwanted of all experiences. I think that it's probably debatable whether it's the most unwanted of all experiences, but I think we can all agree that most, if not all of us, when we think of strong physical pain, really strong physical pain, dread it to some extent or another. And at the same time, some degree of pain is pretty much a universal human experience, or and for animals as well, for other kinds of beings. Yet a funny thing about it is that even though we all experience pain, we have no way of knowing what another person's pain experience is. And they can't possibly know ours. There is no test that can measure the intensity of pain. There's no imaging device that can show pain, and no instrument that can locate pain precisely. You can get any number of tests, X-rays, CAT scans, MRIs, and the like, and you can look at the results and say, oh, that's where you broke your leg. That's why it hurts there. But you're not actually seeing the pain. You could see a tumor, you could see any number of things, and you know that usually people with that situation would feel pain. But you don't see the pain and you can't measure it. So there's a certain subjectivity to it. And then a certain mysteriousness that comes with pain. I think that this is part of the reason why people start to make a lot of assumptions that we're not even aware of about the pain that we have or that other people have. Very often, I'll hear a conversation where, you find out that so and so has a lot of pain from this, from an accident or an illness or whatever reason. And somebody will say, oh, that just must be awful. Another person might think, oh, that doesn't sound too bad. Or you see a person who has pain, but they look like me right now. I don't look like I'm in a lot of pain. I sound pretty happy. But maybe I just have good coping skills. Or maybe it's just because I'm lying down. Maybe I'm on massive amounts of drugs. You really don't know. You just don't know. two people can have the same condition. One can be in really severe pain, and the other one can be in mild or moderate pain. Do we then assume that the person in severe pain just, isn't coping well, or that they have a worse case of the illness? How would we know? The thing is that between all of the mystery and all of the fear around pain, one thing that's developed is a lot of cultural, in the dominant culture, a lot of views around pain that are quite specific. And I think it's really important to be aware of because, for those of you who've been meditating for a while, we have an emphasis on separating our stories, views, ideas, beliefs from the bare experience, the bare physical sensations of what we call pain. But I think it's also important to realize that we're not blank slates. We come into the meditation hall filled with beliefs, many of which are very unconscious, and filled also with experiences, some of which have been harmful. For example, generally speaking, the more marginalized somebody is in our culture, the more they're exposed to things that will cause pain for them, the less protected they are. When you think of the type of work somebody might do when they're more marginalized, for example, or the type of, all of a sudden, Flint, Michigan is coming to mind. Wasn't necessarily pain, but it was drastic illness. Somebody didn't think that community was worthy of protection. The more marginalized one is, the less it's believed that one is in pain, and the less the pain tends to be treated. So consider this quote from a 2017 article in Harvard Medical School's health blog. I will take a sip of water first. Women in pain are much more likely than men to receive prescriptions for sedatives rather than pain medication. One study even showed women who had coronary bypass surgery were only half as likely to be prescribed painkillers as men who had undergone the same procedure. Women wait an average of 65 minutes before receiving an analgesic for acute abdominal pain in the ER in the United States, while men wait only 49 minutes. Similarly, a 2012 study looked at racial and ethnic bias in pain care. This study was a meta-analysis that went back over 20 years of studies. It was massive. Among its findings was that Black patients were 22% less likely than white patients to receive any pain medication at all. This topic could go on forever, for hours. It's really extensive. I'm just, bringing it in briefly to say, to show you why I'm saying that we really do bring our histories, our harm with us, and that we're not blank slates when we arrive in the meditation hall. When I look at what I'm thinking of as the dominant culture, I think there are two basic views about pain, just in my personal opinion. It's not that we don't, I mean, a lot of us have exposure to many cultures that are not part of the dominant culture that may have a lot more healthy, adaptive, balanced ways of being with pain and of behaving around pain. Meditative culture, if there is such a thing, could be one of those ways of getting a different view of it. But I think that it's very difficult if you live in the US for to not have at least some of the dominant views filtered down to you. So that's why I'm emphasizing it now. So the first view I call the moralistic view or the heroic view. And this is where, a person is actually seen as being suspect or bad if they have pain or if they're not seen as coping well with pain. And they're good if they have less pain or they cope, quote unquote, better. So that's the moralistic part. And you especially see this around chronic pain, which is, it's different. Like if you have something acute, like you've just been in a tragic car accident, there's more leeway. Cancer pain, often, not always, people are more understanding about. But if you have chronic pain, especially, or pain from many other kinds of causes, or if you're a marginalized person with cancer pain, it can be like more stigmatized. Oh, why can't they get over it? She's so hysterical. Why can't she just suck it up? So I don't know how old everyone here is or whether you remember this, but in the 90s, there was the women's gymnastic Olympic team. And it was like the wonderful seven gymnasts. And Carrie Strug was like the top gymnast on the team. She had already injured both of her ankles quite badly, but they really needed to win the gold. And she was, so they wanted to go in for her last vault, no matter how much pain she was in. So, despite the fact that she was already injured and limping, she got up, she took the vault, she nailed it, and then a second later, totally collapsed. The crowd thought this was fabulous and they rose up cheering. That's what I mean by calling it the heroic view. She triumphed over pain. Meanwhile, I'm watching with a friend who also had a different illness that caused her chronic pain. And, you know, we had just gotten back from a really long meditation retreat where we worked so hard and so, you know, diligently to really try to see what is this pain about? How can we be with it? And we could not imagine taking a risk like that. After all we'd been through, we wondered if this injury of hers turned permanent, because she was carried off in a stretcher. How would she wind up looking back at it, with regret or pride? And this whole thing came back to me just recently because probably a lot of you know about Simone Biles, who at this past Olympics, another gymnast, she did the opposite. She said no. She said, I am not in good shape. I am not okay to continue. And she dropped out right then and there in the middle of the Olympics. And fortunately, a lot of the world applauded her. Like Naomi Osaka before her in tennis. And I don't actually watch a lot of sports, but I have heard about swimmers and football players and others really starting to take a stand and say, no, we don't want to kill ourselves for this. What our lives are worth more than winning. So I hope that it's changing. But I believe this heroic or moralistic view is mostly where we've been coming from and where we still are. I think I just want to say one more thing about how it also comes into pain coping. There tends to be a lot of judgment around pain coping and other people's pain coping that we're not always aware of. So, like, you might know about somebody with an illness or injury or cancer, and you'll hear somebody say, oh, they're doing so well with it. But what does that mean? How do you know they're doing well with it? What does that look like? Are they doing well with it because they never show pain? Because they smile when you're around? Because, you know, they don't seem to complain? Well, maybe they are doing really well with it. But what if their smiling is because they don't feel comfortable being authentic and saying, you know, this is really hard. I never knew it would be this hard to cope with pain. Maybe they don't feel safe to cry. You don't know unless you know. You know, the other view, I don't think I need to say that much about, is a fear-based view in our culture that, pain is just awful. It's the worst thing you can go through. At my age, with people, not that I'm that old, but people do a lot of their life planning, end of life planning documents, healthcare proxies and such. It's very common to hear somebody say, "Well, I'm not afraid of death, but I definitely don't want to live in too much pain." I'm not criticizing that point of view. I'm just pointing it out because what is pain? Like, do you mean the pain of, maybe the pain that somebody has lingering after an auto accident, or what kind of pain are you imagining? Does it need to be spelled out? I don't know. Do we ever practice paying attention to pain, being with pain? What do we really know of it? What I'm trying to say is that I think the learning that the dominant culture gives us is that pain is something to conquer or to avoid. You don't want to touch it. You don't want to taste it, listen to it, relate to it. And this lack of relating to it, of touching it, just makes the fear worse. So this is where meditation comes in as probably most of you know or have heard. Meditation is really about befriending life. And for me, I can absolutely say it's also about befriending pain. And for me, given that, I really have an experience of pain that can be very extreme, very severe. And it's a day-to-day thing. I'm really never not experiencing pain to some degree or another. So for me, I would absolutely say that the process of befriending pain has taken and continues to take time and a lot of intentionality. It takes a lot of compassion and willingness and humility. One of the reasons why it takes so much time, and I think it's, even though my experience might be more extreme than some of yours, I still think, it takes time for most people because we have such deeply ingrained habits and beliefs around pain and deeply ingrained reactions. Not only the conditioned beliefs that I've been talking about, but the instinctual physical and mental reactions to strongly unpleasant sensations. In Buddhism, we use the word unpleasant for something that's a little bit unpleasant, all the way up to something that's like excruciating. It doesn't really distinguish, but it is really a very animalistic part of our nature. Unpleasant, react. I don't want it. I don't like it. I want to get rid of it. I want to push it away. So it's not about trying to force ourselves to shut down this instinctive response. It's about getting close to it, respecting it, attending to it, observing it, experiencing it, not judging it, honoring it. Of course, I'm programmed to not like this. But it's deeply ingrained, and it takes a lot of patience before we can learn other ways of more gently and lovingly being with sensations that are so unpleasant. Tonight, I won't be going into the how of working with pain, because I think it's really important to get the headset about pain clear before that happens. And I will say that despite the fact that I'm emphasizing that it's taking a really long time for me, it really is possible to be with even very severe pain with much more peace and ease and love and even joy than I ever thought. These are real human possibilities for just regular people like us. At the same time, it's not quite what I imagined it would be when I first started meditating. I had really distorted views of how meditation could help with pain. First, I thought it was going to cure me, to get rid of the pain entirely. What I found out was that the Buddha really didn't set out at all to get rid of anybody's physical pain. The Buddha was about freedom from mental suffering, from inner bondage. For some people, there is the fortunate side effect that some physical pain disappears. I haven't been one of them, but that wasn't what he promised. And I don't know that many people who have experienced that. Probably some of you have heard the famous teaching of the Buddhas that explains his view of some aspect of freedom around pain, in a sutta called the arrow. There's also one called the dart. They're pretty similar. So you have a wise person, and the wise person is hit by an arrow, let's say in the leg, and it really hurts. The wise person can't press undo, the undo button, and suddenly not be hit by the arrow. So they just have to deal with it however they know to deal with it. Then an unwise person, same thing, hit by an arrow. But the unwise person thinks maybe they can somehow find some undo button or undo clause there. And they start to rail against the pain. Oh, that person who threw the arrow, they were awful, and this is going to ruin my life, and I'm going to lose my job, or whatever their rant and rave is. Or maybe they just resist it. I hate this pain. I hate this. And the moral of the story is that the unwise person has two problem, two arrows, the original arrow that hurt, and the second arrow of their mental reaction that's causing all this mental suffering, where the wise person only has the one arrow to deal with. Another way of saying it is that our response to pain is more important than the pain itself in determining how much we'll suffer. It is how we respond to pain where that determines the impact that we can have. I ask myself, how am I relating to pain? How am I relating to it? But even when I learned how to ask myself, how am I relating to it? And I knew that the response was more important than the pain itself, I still had misconceptions about meditation and pain. Somehow I thought, because I'd heard teachers like me say, you can have even severe pain and still be in peace and have love and feel joy. And so I got the impression that a good meditator always felt calm and cool and collected, and they could function well even through severe pain. Well, I knew that that just wasn't me. Over my years of practice, there came a point where I really, after quite a while, started to feel like, on the meditation cushion, I was doing pretty well. I often, especially on retreat, could find some peace with pain. But I had a harder time at home. I didn't have as much concentration. And what about when I was being active? For example, when I was cooking. Cooking, I would be upright. Now, being upright, standing for me, is not only painful, but it's bringing up all those other unwanted symptoms that aren't pain, but that are really exhausting and require a lot of attention. So, if I were meditating formally, I could put all of my attention on all of those difficult sensations, and I could, soften around it. And relax and do all kinds of wonderful meditative techniques. But I'm cooking. I have to focus on the recipe, focus on what I'm doing, and the sensations are getting more and more intense the more I stand, the more I move. It's not so easy. So imagine my relief when I went one day to the website Access to Insight, and I decided to look up everything I could possibly find in the teachings about pain. And I came across like three different examples where the Buddha himself was scheduled to teach. He was supposed to, give a talk to a group of monks. And once he was really fatigued, once he had a headache, and once he had a backache. And so he looked over to his right-hand man, the Venerable Ananda, and he basically said, "Ananda, my back hurts. I don't want to give this talk. Would you do it for me?" Ananda, being the most generous monk, said, "Of course." And the Buddha, in at least two of these, said, "Great." And he went off and slept while Ananda gave the talk. I felt so much better after that. I stopped judging myself so much because the Buddha occasionally didn't want to go to work when he was in pain. Now, he could have. There's no doubt that he could have. But it was nice to know that he didn't want to. So, there's another aspect to the delusions I still had that a good yogi, a good meditator would be calm, cool, and collected with pain. And this was. I was getting there. I understood that you could have your limits, but I still thought, if you were a really good meditator, you would always be quiet, and you'd have that little Buddha smile on your face. So I'll tell you a story that might seem a little intimate, but don't worry, I'll keep it discreet. One of the most painful parts of my experience is that over the years, I've gotten numerous really, really painful digestive infections. And I have nerve damage in my intestines. So these infections would be painful for anyone. I don't know for sure that mine are more, but my digestion hurts on any day of the week. So having these infections has really been, some of the hardest things I've had to go through. So during one long period where I just could not get rid of these infections, it went on and on and on, month after month after month. I was really doing quite well in my practice, though. I was right there with it. So one day I found myself in the bathroom. And doing what you do on the toilet would be the most painful moments for me. And you see, we bring the practice with us everywhere, you know, mindfulness in daily life, even in the toilet. So it's in keeping with that. So on this particular occasion, you know, I'm really practicing. I'm fully present. And I hear myself scream as I'm doing my business. And I notice that I'm screaming. A scream is coming out of my body. And I'm not experiencing aversion. None at all. Which just blew me away. Let me remind you. So aversion is part of what that second arrow is about. Aversion is, I want to get rid of it. I don't like it. Or I hate it. Aversion can be really subtle. You can have aversion with just a mildly unpleasant sensation. I'm a little cold. And without thinking, maybe I just grab for a jacket because there was aversion. So to not have aversion to something that painful, that's why I was so amazed. And to see that the scream wasn't an expression of aversion. It's just that this very intense thing was happening in my body, and it was just very natural. The body was doing its thing. It was part of the experience. I mean, I would imagine I haven't given birth, but I would imagine that would be a possibility in childbirth as well. Such an enormous thing, pushing a baby out of your body. Sure, why not have a scream come out of your mouth? So I bring this up because, first of all, I just want you to know that my ideas about pain didn't match what I ultimately experienced, because I've been practicing for over 35 years, and I've just really lumped like a 35-year journey with pain, you know, into this talk, and didn't really give you any time signs. And so I would encourage you too to not have too many models in your head about what pain should be like, or what you should be like when you're experiencing pain. The other thing is, I want you to know that within a matter of some minutes after that screaming experience, was it 3 minutes, 10 minutes? I don't know. I don't remember. This was a few years ago. I experienced aversion. By then, the pain was much less. Who cares? I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to it. Aversion's very hardwired. And that's the thing. You know, in my experience, is that it's really a dance. This was the big misconception that I had, was that I was going to reach a place where I would get past pain. If I couldn't get rid of it, I was going to be immune to it. It was not ever going to bother me, because I would be such a fabulous yogi. Well, forget it. I don't have any kind of goal like that now. Maybe one of you people will achieve that. I'm not even trying. What I can say is that I continue to do my best to stay present with pain and to bring love and compassion into the experience. And when I can't, I try to bring love to the fact that in that moment, I can't. What's really important for me is not to make aversion and reactivity the enemy. Judging myself for having aversion or reactions or making up stories or being afraid is just like adding an arrow upon an arrow, upon an arrow, upon an arrow. Layers and layers of aversion to aversion to aversion to aversion. And of course, it makes it all about me. You know, I am my pain, or I am my pain coping, or I am what my pain coping looks like to other people. That's not freedom. You know, a few weeks ago, I was in a class with Narayan, and I don't remember what she was talking about or what prompted it, but she said, the practice is not about being great, it's about being free. I think that really fits here. So for me, the important thing is to see if I can allow whatever's happening to just be about the way conditions are coming together right now. It's nothing personal. And seeing if it's possible to appreciate the expression of life that I am in any given moment, even if the moment is one of great difficulty, great suffering. So, you know, on that note, I'd just like to close with a quote from Pema Chodron. She said, sometimes the teachings emphasize the wisdom, brilliance, or sanity that we possess. And sometimes they emphasize the obstacles. How it is that we feel stuck in a small, dark place. These are actually two sides of one coin. When they are put together, inspiration or well-being and burden or suffering describe the human condition. That's what we see when we meditate. We see how beautiful and wonderful and amazing things are. And we see how caught up we are. It isn't that one is the bad part and one is the good part, but that it's a kind of interesting, smelly, rich, fertile mess of stuff. When it's all mixed up together, it's us, humanness. This is what we're here to see for ourselves. May all beings be free of pain and suffering. May all beings be free of judgment. May we all have mercy on ourselves and each other. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.